The hour of 8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections Committee. Rev. Sam Kalin, House File 1259. You have a motion for us?
I do, if we have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Oh, hang on. Let me see if we do. Rev. Sam Kalin, I don't. No, we do not. We'll wait until we get a quorum.
Okay. Well, I will still speak to House File 1259. Good morning, and Mr. Chair and members. House File 1259 is a bill to remove many of the barriers for our active duty service members, and it's a result of the Secretaries of State, both the previous Secretary, Mary Kiffmeyer, and the current Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie, who's with us today, and the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, working together to remove as many barriers as possible while maintaining the security of our elections. I do have an author's amendment that will move when we have a quorum, and I can speak to the substance of the author's amendment when appropriate.
Why don't you move your bill anyway? We don't need a quorum to move your bill. We won't act on the motion, but let's move the bill to get the bill before us.
All right. I will move House File 1259, and I do believe we can go to the General Register with this one.
All right. So the motion is before us. Rep. Sam Kalin.
And I will also move my A1 amendment, and when we have a quorum, we can act on it. But I will just quickly explain what the A1 amendment does, and then I'll actually hand it over to Secretary Ritchie to talk about the bill more substantively. In essence, the first portion of the A1 amendment clarifies a little bit of the we're asking our military members, our service members, to state under oath without having to have a second signature, a co-signer, when they're voting. And so it just clarifies the oath that they're taking. And you'll see that once on page 2 and again on page 3. Section 7, the ranked voting study at the bottom of page 4, top of page 5, is actually stricken as well. And then, if I can turn to my marked up copy, and then in section 6, the transmitting and returning of ballots, we'd originally worked with the Pentagon and the Department of Defense to allow not only to email PDFs of the ballot to our service members after their applications, but the Pentagon was hoping that Minnesota might allow for ballots to be emailed back, and then understanding that they would then get the marking would then get transferred to a normal ballot at the precinct. We do not feel that that's the in the best interest of security for Minnesota, and we're removing so many barriers that we do believe that we can retain this the important secret marking of ballots and get them back in time. And so there's just a little bit of remnants of language in Section 6 that the left over from the initial attempt to allow for emailing ballots directly back to the states. And so we are no longer doing that, and that's what the rest of the A1 amendment does.
Excuse me, Rep. Sam Kalin. We have a quorum, so let's renew your motion on the A1 amendment, and let's put the bill in the order that you wish. So all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is in the order that you wish, Rep. Sam Kalin.
Excellent. Now that we have the bill in its proper form, I will hand it over to the Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie.
Mr. Secretary, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Ritchie, Secretary of State. Thank you very much for this opportunity to present this important bill. This was actually our first initiative on policy from our office, and we're very pleased that it is moving along so well and so quickly and getting such important public support. This bill was put together by sitting down with particularly the families, but also the representatives of different branches of our uniformed service and others who are overseas to address what's, I think, everybody has recognized but hasn't found solutions for in the past. The very short time between our primary and our general election makes it very difficult to use the normal postal service means for getting ballots out and back. But also there were other barriers in law, and there were other things that the Pentagon pointed out to us that we had not previously considered before as potential options. And so this bill brings together the input from family and service members, others who are overseas, and our representatives here at home of both the Guard and the Reserves, to put together a whole package that we think will go a long ways to addressing the problem. There are many sections of the bill, so let me just highlight a few of them so I don't take up too much of your time, but we can, in questions, answer anything else that people might ask. The first is the general problem of the timing between our primary and our general election is being addressed in some other legislation, but it does not seem likely that anything's going to happen in terms of changing that short time frame next year, 2008. It appears we'll have a fairly substantial number of military personnel overseas, but we always have a large number of missionaries, of people on voluntary service, business people, and students and others. So one of the proposals is that we would use the internet and email to get the ballots out to voters who are overseas. This will, in a sense, cut the time in half so that that will give an opportunity for people to get their ballot back on time. As you know, under Minnesota law, if their ballot is not received by the end of Election Day, their vote cannot be counted. And so this will help speed up that part of the process, hopefully cut the time in half. We think this will be a big addition. Secondly, some of you have heard of the term the submarine ballot. This is a ballot introduced by the federal government originally for sailors who were going to be on submarines for very long periods of time. Out of touch from a communication standard. It's a form of an absentee ballot with a lot of lines, and voters were able to just write down the party or the name of the person or indicate who they wanted to vote for, and those were ballots used in federal elections. We're proposing their use in our state elections. This would allow a soldier to go on the internet after a primary, look at who were the declared victors in those primaries, and then use the submarine ballot as a way of marking indicate their preference, indicate who they want to vote for, and to get those back to us. Another specific provision that that we are proposing is that it is a case that the children of missionaries, of some business people, and of active duty service men and women overseas who do not live in the United States and have not lived in the United States have been excluded from being able to vote. Our proposal would bring Minnesota in line with about a couple dozen other states who allow the children of parents who are Minnesota voters to vote in Minnesota for the federal races, president, vice president, Senate, Congress, in the state of their parents, which if their parents were voting in Minnesota, they would be allowed to vote in Minnesota. Well, of course, they would have to meet all of the normal standards of age and the others that we have. There are other provisions in the bill that would simplify what a soldier must do to get their ballot back to us. We believe this bill will go a long way to addressing some of the problems, and we're hopeful that action will take place that will eventually give us more time between the primary and the general election, and that'll make a big difference as well. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any questions? Representative Emery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Secretary, thank you for being here today to explain this to us. I have a question on the bill on page 1 at line 1.16. Mr. Secretary or Representative Kalin, the way this has been explained to us and presented is that this is for military personnel, but in fact that's not the way it's written. I have some concerns. It seems to be much broader than the way it's been represented, and quite frankly, I don't know what other situations it would apply to, but it just caught my eye that the way this has been explained to me a couple of times is this would apply to military personnel, but it's not necessarily drafted that way. It certainly would apply to military personnel, but it wouldn't be restricted to military personnel from my reading of it. What am I missing?
Mr. Secretary or Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 1 is broadly written because it ensures that if you're a United States citizen and you're eligible to vote in Minnesota, that you can vote in the federal races, even though you may have never resided in the United States but are eligible to vote by law in Minnesota. And so we understand that that this generally gets to missionary kids and also to what it, children of service members who may have spent their entire lives overseas, but we want to make sure that that we're enfranchising as many citizens as possible and removing the barriers as appropriate for all citizens who are eligible to vote in Minnesota.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kalin, I have two questions based on that, and it hasn't alleviated my concern at all. The first question is, isn't it true that as the law stands right now, if you've never resided in Minnesota, you don't have a right to vote in Minnesota right now? And in fact, that's a significant change because you're just relating their residence to where a parent resides. Isn't that true?
Representative Kalin or Secretary of State?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer. Other states have this provision, from what I understand, and we have citizens who should be enfranchised who are not currently being enfranchised. This would remove that barrier.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Emmer.
That does not answer my question at all. And while I appreciate that you have a good faith intent to give people the right to vote, I think that the concerns that I initially noted with this phrase, I think they should be highlighted even more. You don't have a definition for parent. Would that be the birth parent or a parent that has been determined by some other mean? That means that's not defined. Plus, I have a question about, Mr. Chairman, whether a voting age non-citizen who is a child who's never resided in the U.S. and is a non-citizen, recently immigrates to this country, if they've got a parent living here, does that mean that they get to vote under this language? Because it appears they do.
Representative Emmer, we have another individual who wishes to, I think, respond to that question. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Allness, Minnesota National Guard, Department of Military Affairs. Mr. Chair, Representative Ember, probably best to give an example or two of that. A lot of times we will have people serving overseas and of civilian status are often called expatriates, where they're working for the U.S. government, whether for the in the Federal Department of State or for the Department of Defense, serving overseas, particularly in Europe. And serving in Europe several times, I've had the opportunity to meet these people. And what they do is they serve their life overseas, working for the federal government, and they raise their children overseas. Now, these children are citizens of the United States, but yet they've never lived in the United States. And often they feel disenfranchised because it's very difficult for them to participate in what goes on over the states. And what this provision does is it would allow them to vote in the federal election and allow them to participate as a U.S. citizen in those elections.
Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the testifier for that. I certainly wouldn't... If it's drafted specifically for these expatriates or certain group of people, what I'm afraid of are the abuses that could come. And it seems to me, Representative Kalin, that this language should be reworked, or it should be turned into an amendment and offered to the bill I heard about yesterday that Representative Kahn has that would allow non-citizens to vote. But it's just a thought.
I'm sorry, Colonel. We did not get your last name.
I'm sorry, sir. Colonel Eric Alness.
Could you spell that for me?
Sure. A-H-L-N-E-S-S.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel, I'm wearing two stars. Just want you to know that. and I strongly, obviously, support the military. I have a problem with the same language on the first page, Representative Kalin. It's hard for me to fathom, and I'm looking at this basically from a military standpoint, that a U.S. citizen, someone was born in Germany on a U.S. base, they're a citizen, they've never lived in the United States. It's very hard for me to fathom that they could join the military and not take their training somewhere in the continental United States. Are there boot camps in Germany and a soldier may never come to the United States for training and then be sent back to foreign soil?
Representative Kalin, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Howes, this particular section of the bill is geared towards enfranchising the children of lifetime service members rather than service members themselves. So that the particular of your instance, I'll just speak about a constituent of mine that I believe spent, if not her entirety of her childhood up until 18 in Germany, spent the large vast majority of it, and never did reside in the United States. And so she would, I believe that she returned to the States for her basic training and for her own service, but had she not enlisted, she would be enfranchised with parents eligible to vote in Minnesota. She'd be enfranchised by Section 1. I would also like to point out for the committee that Section 1 explicitly says that it provides the exclusive voting procedure for United States citizens. So the concerns we heard earlier, I think, are addressed by reading the bill.
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kalin, I appreciate what you're trying to do, and maybe it's just part of it's going over my head, but I'll just give you a for instance. I believe it was about 4 years ago, there was a man who was raised in California, and he went over to Iraq, and he worked for Bin Laden. He made several speeches on tape and sent him back to the United States. Your bill probably doesn't deal with him, but is he eligible to vote? Or does this help him vote in any way?
I believe he was raised in Mr. Chair and Representative Howes, I believe he was raised in California. I'm sorry, I was reading a note.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kalin, he was born and raised in the United States, left for Iraq, denounced his citizenship. I believe he's on the list of 52 in the deck of cards. Sorry, I don't remember his name. And I'm not saying that your bill would help him vote, but he probably, well, if he denounces citizenship, I'm not sure how that works, but I'll just leave it at that. I think you're on the right track. I just think there's something here that needs to be done to make it feel better, I guess.
Representative Kalin, you want to?
I'll just briefly point out that this section only would, the new language would only apply to those who have never resided in the United States. So Representative Howes and committee, Mr. Chair, when I first read the section, I had these same questions. And having spoken with the Secretary of State and reviewed the survey of what other states are doing that you have from the Secretary of State's office and speaking to both active members of our military and then also children like my constituent who grew up and would be enfranchised by Section 1. And again, this is only for federal offices. for president, vice president, senator, and federal representative. I understand that Hennepin County gets about 20 calls on this issue every election, and so it, you know, extrapolating out from there, it's a concern in Minnesota, and it will enfranchise people who do have the right to vote, who are citizens, and I think it's the least we can do for those who are serving overseas, spending their life in the service of our country.
One very brief follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your patience. Representative Killen, a son or daughter of a missionary currently has never resided in the United States. Could they, under current law, vote for president and vice president, but no congressional or Senate seat because they didn't have a defined state?
Representative Kalin, or
if their parents are eligible to vote in Minnesota, without this section, no, they could not vote. If they're a resident of, say, Arizona, Nebraska, Tennessee, Wisconsin, or any of the other states listed on here, they could. So we're bringing Minnesota in line with these others.
Yeah, members, there was a sheet that was passed out at the request of the Secretary of State, I believe, voting by citizens who have never lived in the United States, and it does list those states. I'm just going to make a brief announcement before we continue. Representative Emmer has requested that House File 729 be removed from the agenda for today because he's still working on an amendment to that bill, and if there's anyone here who is waiting for that bill, they no longer need to wait. They may leave. We will be bringing that up on another day. So that's removed from the agenda. Representative Hilty.
I just wanted to mention, I'm working on 20 amendments to that bill.
And Representative Powers is working on 10, so we're up to 30. If both of you would get them to us well before 5 o'clock, it would be nice. All right. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to point out, and it's been said, but on line 1.1 of this bill, it's like I said, it expressly says citizens, and having a brother who served 20 years in the military and was in Germany, this would allow his kids, and he kept his residence in Minnesota up until his last tour of duty when he bought a house in Virginia, but this would have allowed his kids to be able to vote in a presidential election. So I think this is a good provision, and I applaud you for bringing the bill forward. It has nothing; it says nothing about non-citizens.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just have the committee know that Representative Emmer is an equal opportunity amender since he's amending his own bills as well. But, Mr. Chairman, if we're going to do just what other states are doing, maybe we ought to go the direction of Georgia and get some photo ID requirements here in the state of Minnesota. But my questions regarding this bill are such that I guess Section 8 is something I'm curious about, Representative Kalin. Maybe you can explain to me why this ranked voting provision is in this military bill.
Representative Kalin.
Representative Broad, that's Section 7 of the bill, and actually it has been stricken in the author's amendment that this committee adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kalin, thank you for striking that. I have concerns about that piece, and maybe you can tell me, too, has Section 10 been stricken, or is that still in the bill?
Representative Kalin, there is the A1 amendment, Representative Broad, was incorporated into the bill early as the committee started, so that may address your concerns. Secretary of State may wish to respond. Mr. Secretary, or Representative Kalin?
I'll just briefly state what Section 10 is still in the bill, and I'll just briefly state what it does and actually ask both Colonel Allness and the Secretary to address the specifics. In essence, that if we have a mobilization of the Guard in a period that ends up creating barriers for those who are mobilized, it allows it will enfranchise these voters, and I'll actually let the Secretary of State first describe what it would do, and then maybe Colonel Allness describe what that means from the perspective of our service members.
Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad. Most of these provisions came to us, the language from the Department of Defense, including the authorization for children of citizens who've not lived in the country. This is another one. Let me just read what the Pentagon's suggestion was to us, because I think it well summarizes. During a period of a declared emergency or other situation where short-term time frame for ballot transmission is created, it is recommended that the Minnesota Chief Election Officer have the authority to designate alternate methods for handling absentee ballots to ensure voters have the opportunity to exercise their right to vote. The Chief Election Official and the Federal Voting Assistance Program could establish expeditious methods for handling absentee ballots, including electronic transmission. And then they provided us with sample language for bill language. And, you know, this is the concern that they raised to us, and we believe this could happen. We've actually had, of course, September 11th and other dramatic examples, and perhaps Colonel Alness could give us some specifics of how they view it from their side.
Colonel Alness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad. Yeah, it's easy to see some examples in rare cases where this would come up. The example of a domestic emergency such as September 11th is certainly the most poignant example that could be brought up, but also probably a more pragmatic approach would be in a state active duty role where the Minnesota National Guard is called to duty to respond to a state emergency. It could be something as local as a tornado or something broader, probably not that time of year, as a flood, or any type of response, or where we have to provide civil support to the law enforcement authorities, where the service members would be taken away from their ability to vote to serve other Minnesota citizens, and this would allow them, under those rare circumstances, where they'd be able to vote at a later time or under a different circumstance.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman and Secretary Ritchie, I'm trying to figure out, we're allowing the Secretary of State's office to adopt rules. If we're able to look at this and I can see situations where it would be a problem, but why don't we just adopt legislation? As opposed to allow the Secretary of State's office to go the route of rules.
Mr. Secretary.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, I believe the Pentagon's suggestion came from the belief that it's hard for legislators to imagine all situations, and that having the authority to handle a situation as it specifically occurs is what they found has been the most effective for making sure that emergency situations are addressed.
Mr. Chairman and Secretary Ritchie, you haven't been to this committee. Obviously, we are a very imaginative group. The rules process, maybe you can walk me through the rules process. I mean, it doesn't necessarily allow you the ultimate flexibility that I think you might be looking for in terms of notice and things along those lines. So maybe you can help me understand that better.
Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Broad. Actually, the language authorizes emergency authority, the actual rules-making procedure, I don't believe, is specifically addressed in this legislation.
Yes.
Yes,
it is.
Representative Kahn, let's be recognized by the chair first, instead of blurting today. Mr. Secretary, you want to, or Representative Kahlen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the important provision of Section 10 is on line 6.8. The Secretary of State may prescribe by emergency order special procedures or requirements necessary to facilitate absentee voting by those citizens directly affected. And, you know, I think it's only a decade and a half ago that we had the Halloween blizzard that required, I believe, either did require or could, a similar event and similar timeline could require mobilization for our seniors and other vulnerable members of our society. And we certainly don't want to disenfranchise the Guard from voting when they're doing such important service and saving lives.
Representative Broad, does that answer your question? Okay. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't remember exactly what New York did on September 11th. I know that the precinct right next to the World Trade Center was directly affected. Was the entire election canceled, or was just the election in those Manhattan precincts canceled?
Representative Kim.
And what do we have? Does the secretary who had the authority to do that? And how would something, you know, a catastrophe that just affected one part of the election in Minnesota be handled?
Representative Kahlen, you want to respond to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn, I believe I actually had the honor of speaking about the our campaign finance system as a candidate to a working group in New York, in the city of New York in Manhattan last year from the candidate's perspective, and actually the woman who runs the New York City elections was there, and I believe that we spoke about this vaguely, and I believe that they actually rescheduled the primary 2 or 3 weeks later. I can't quite remember if someone in the audience is, but I'll get back to you on that, Representative Kahn, for the specific and what their plans would be. I do think that short of a catastrophe, that those provisions would be covered under section, or that those possibilities would be covered in section 10. I think that I don't know that we can fully anticipate every possibility and every catastrophe possible on that scale. This is really geared towards those members of the Guard and who are activated in very short notice and could be disenfranchised without the emergency powers.
Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't really asking about that. I was asking about the broader question of who has the power to cancel an election in the state of Minnesota. And did New York have special powers, or did they just do it? I mean, this is more than just absentee ballot. This was just the whole election was canceled and changed. I mean, the question was it the whole election or just in Manhattan or whatever? Must have been the whole election.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
Let's
Mr. Chairman.
Well, the Secretary of State is here. If the Secretary wants to respond to your question about who can cancel elections, I mean, you
Mr. Chairman,
Secretary,
I don't know who can cancel elections.
Yeah.
It's an important question, and it's one that we'll look into and get back to. Perhaps counsel knows.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn, Mr. Gary is looking for a potential answer for you, and if we find it before the end of the hearing, we'll share that.
Mr. Chair, I may have some information. I have a little Google screen on the back of my eyeglasses here and was searching while during this conversation, and I believe that I think the URL is correct that I was looking at, that the election was postponed by the governor, and that in Minnesota, I believe that if I clicked on the right link, that only the courts can do that, can cancel an election in Minnesota. But I could be wrong. I could have visited the wrong website.
Galen, why don't we just let Representative Mr. Gehring proceed, and maybe without your Google glasses, we may still find that information. Further questions, members? Representative Olson, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I'm not going to say it was good to be gone. It was good to be gone.
Representative Olson, we share that. And do you have a question?
Where were you, Mr. Chair? Were you gone as
well? No, I was thinking of your previous statement, but proceed, Representative.
Oh, I was as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been gone, so I may have missed your protocol here, but are we to the point of amendments, or are we still just discussing the bill?
Well, we are at both.
That's what I thought.
Discussing the bill and potential amendments, unless Mr. Kalin, Representative Kalin, may have someone else who wishes to testify. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Why don't we do that now, so if individuals need to leave. Yes, Colonel Aldis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Aldis, Department of Military Affairs. Just wanted to amplify a couple of things. I know we talked a little bit about some maybe the more contentious aspects, but there are some things in there I think that we need to mention in a little more detail. First of all, the electronic delivery of the ballots is a very important aspect of this bill, allowing the ballots to get to the service members overseas in a timely manner. Basically, it cuts the transmission time down in half and would help facilitate making sure that the ballots completed by the service members who are deployed would get back in time. So that's a very important provision for our service members. The second thing is the change of ID requirements. If you look at the military ID right here, the only identifying number it has on it is a soldier's or service member's Social Security number. So obviously due to Privacy Act and identity theft and issues of that concern, it's best not to be sharing that number even in this type of venue. So opening up to other type of identifications rather than just a military ID is a very helpful aspect of this. And finally, the third thing is the self-certification requirement is very important. As we talk to service members overseas, one of the themes that comes back time and time again is who can do the certifying. And really, the standard is quite low. and you can self-certify at the ballot stations here in the state. So having a service member overseas where you're using some good controls to make sure that they are the one using the same ID to get it to also used in their mailing it in, the self-certification is really a prudent measure to help make sure we remove any of the confusion overseas. And so basically those type of provisions really answer the biggest questions that our service members overseas have is, will my vote get back in time and will my vote count?
Thank you. Representative House, do you have a question?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. Colonel, and for the Secretary of State, electronically sending a ballot is wonderful, but I'm sure the Colonel's aware that there are times at an FOB where there could be 2 to 4 weeks where they are not allowed to use a computer or a cell phone because of security reasons or whatever. I know my son, in his time over there, has had at least 3 occasions when they've gone 30 days without any electronic communication whatsoever. So, Mr. Secretary, I would make sure that you get this out sooner rather than later if you're going to transmit it over electronically.
All right. Representative Olson, did you have an amendment?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I first had some questions.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 4, Representative Kalin or Mr. Secretary, starting on line 26, well, actually, starting on line 21, the voter must return the voted ballots. It's plural there, but down on line 23, it's singular. And I'm curious why a single voter must return the voted ballots in plural. And then later, I may be missing something, upon receipt of a ballot, the county auditor, there seems to be an inconsistency there. Could you expound upon that for me, please?
I think, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, I do believe we may actually have a typo there on although counsel is shaking its head, so I'll defer to counsel here.
Right. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, I think what this is getting at is sometimes in one election you may have more than one piece of paper, more than one ballot, depending on which offices are being voted for or not. And so you may get, if I'm not mistaken, you may get in the mail several actual ballots. And so that's why there's the plural. There's the plural, and then when they're talking about the singular, they're talking about when the county auditor, you know, takes one of them and does what the auditor does with it. So I think that it's not a typo. It's just a sort of a nuance of
Mr. Chair,
referred to.
Representative Olson.
I'm asking the question because I've never voted without having just one ballot. And everybody's on that ballot. If Colonel could address if it's different in this situation.
Colonel Alness?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, no, I'm sorry, I don't know the details. I haven't had a vote in that case yet.
Okay, well, my other question, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Olson.
Unless there's another response from Representative Kalin?
I just briefly just pledge to, Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, I pledge to just clarify this and work with you on that, on the particular S. I believe just it may be, and we'll work with counsel on this, it may be that, for instance, with the submarine ballots, that there's a federal submarine ballot and then a state submarine ballot, and so that would be duplicate, that would be not duplicate ballots, but that would be multiple ballots. So we'll clarify it. And
Rep. Symbols.
Mr. Chair, my next question is on line 26, and forgive me, I'm not real familiar with this process, but I'm on line 25 and 26. After the information on the certificate of voter eligibility has been verified, the votes marked in the ballot must be transferred to a duplicate ballot. Why is that, and who marks them?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, that language was stricken in the A1 amendment. That just, again, the Pentagon asked for service members to be able to actually email back a ballot, and then that would be transferred onto another ballot. We believe that that's not something that's appropriate for Minnesota with our security and maintaining the integrity of our elections. So we just have decided not to adopt that one suggestion from the Pentagon.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, on
Representative
page one, the language that we've already been discussing. At first, I thought, Representative Kalin, on line 16, after they, that we needed to insert something about an eligible voter. But that is actually addressed in the above old language.
Yes.
The only question that remained for me is what happens in the case where the parents have died? Then you have, will you then have these military people or missionary kids or what have you not being able to vote and they have to come back to the states to establish residency?
Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, in none of the materials that we've got from the Pentagon nor in our conversations with any council or anyone else has this specific issue been addressed, and so I would think it would be good to get some legal opinion on that question. The connection on residency was where the parents were residents and whether they were dead or alive. They had been residents in Minnesota, so my guess is they would then apply, let's say they were killed in an accident or something dramatic had happened. But it's the residency where the parents had been voting would be, I think, the determinant. But it would be good to get legal counsel on that specific point.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
And thank you, Mr. Secretary. I still have concerns with the language. I think Representative Emmer is onto something, but it did seem clear to me that if the parents died by this language, they would not be able to vote. And after the word have on line 16, could say have or have had a parent who is eligible to vote.
All right, Representative Olson, is this a suggestion or an amendment? We're rapidly getting down to our last six meetings, and if you have an amendment, then offer an amendment, but we really are pressed for time here. So is it an amendment or a suggestion?
Mr. Chair, begging your pardon, it was a suggestion to address the matter that seemed to have been acknowledged, and then, Mr. Chair, it's certainly not my intent.
Representative Olson, you started this conversation with an amendment. Now, are you going to offer one?
Mr. Chair, it is not my intention to act in such a way that you're even happier next time I'm gone. So I will withdraw.
All right. Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Emmer.
I have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Emmer.
I would move to insert the following language on line 1.16 after the word parent. I would include the following, is serving or has served in the U.S. military and.
Representative Emmer, I'm going to have Mr. Gehring clarify that one for us so we're sure. So, Mr. Gang, can you clarify Representative Emmer's amendment for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, so after the word parent, do you want to insert is serving or?
I'm sorry, Mr. Gang. It should be who is serving or has served in the U.S. military and.
Okay. So after the word who, we're going to insert is serving or who has served and.
Sure.
Okay.
And then finish it with who.
Okay. So the amendment would, the sentence would say, or because although they have never resided in the United States, they have a parent who is serving or who has served and is eligible to vote in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Representative Emmer?
Mr. Chairman, that is what I'm moving, and I think it's based on the testimony that we've heard for these expatriates or others, if this is indeed what it's intended to be applied to, then I think we should make the language reflect what it is we're trying to address.
Right. First of all, is everyone clear on this amendment? This is a rather substantive change here. Mm-hmm. So, Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Emmer, I think you need to work on the amendment a little bit because in my childhood I had a friend that was born in Germany and his father worked for the United States government, but he was not part of the military. So if that person would have stayed there, obviously they moved back, but then with your language they would not be allowed to vote. Also, a son or daughter of a missionary, if the parents came back here and lived, I also have relatives who are missionaries, and I have cousins who are over in India, that would also affect them. So your intent is excellent. It just has to be somehow redefined to include a missionary or include a parent who worked for the military or could work for Honeywell and still be born, be a citizen by where they were born overseas. So I appreciate your amendment, but it narrows down, eliminates a whole lot of people.
Representative Khan, to the amendment.
Yes, I would just oppose the amendment. I think that it puts a discriminatory factor in here. I think there are people who are teaching in foreign universities, people in the foreign service, and as Representative Howe said, people who are missionaries and so forth. I don't think it looks as if none of the other states restrict this only to military people, and I just think we should just vote the amendment down and not try and tinker with it.
Let's ask the sponsor, Representative Kalin.
I oppose the amendment for the reasons
stated. Any further discussion? Representative Brett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe Representative Kalin, I'm kind of curious, how many people are we talking about? In the provision that you had, I'm trying to get a sense of, I mean, what volume is out there that aren't eligible currently that would be eligible under either your provision or Representative Emmer's amendment.
Representative
Kalin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad, as I stated before, Hennepin County themselves receive 20 phone calls every election cycle. So extrapolating that out over the state, we're talking a couple hundred who have the right phone number and are willing to take the time and the expense to call about the issue. So, see if we have more data available. But again, when we're talking about folks who have a right to vote but are disenfranchised by the law, it's always a difficult thing to exactly determine who is not getting caught by the holes in the net.
Representative, any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I apologize if this issue was addressed earlier. I'm just confused. I mean, are we talking about folks that maybe are 30 years old who have never resided in the United States because maybe they've been on missionary work or have had parents that have been in foreign affairs, you know, all their lives? I don't know if this is something that should, the way I'm reading it, it currently would apply to anybody. And, I mean, they could have never lived in the United States, and they're 30 years old or 35, and just because their parents are eligible, I don't know if that really should qualify them to vote in the United States. I mean, I can understand if it's, you know, someone who is 18 and they have been on this kind of lifestyle all their life, and they maybe are going to a college, or maybe they are doing teaching for English courses or something to that extent, you know, up to a certain period, maybe 23 years old. But, I mean, if they're 30 years old and have never, you know, been to the United States, and I just don't know if this should apply to them. And I'm wondering if that was your intent or if what your intent is.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My intent is to make sure that every citizen can exercise their constitutional right to vote, regardless of the barriers that are put in front of them by state statute. I'd like to remove those and make sure that every citizen can exercise the constitutional right to vote, and that's what Section 1 does.
Representative Member, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I think there's a lot of concern about this language, but out of respect for your time, and I apologize for offering it, at this point, I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Representative Member withdraws. Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Kalin renews his motion that House File 1259, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kalin. The next bill up, Representative Hilty, you are back with us again with House File 1110. Members, there's a green packet that has all of the information that you had wanted saved from the previous hearing. So you can use that as a start. And Representative Hilty, why don't you move your bill again for us in the House File 1110.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 1110 be recommended to pass and be referred to Committee on Finance with a further recommendation that it be referred to the Division on State Government Finance.
All right. And then we have a series of amendments.
first one were.
Mr. Chair, if we could.
Representative Hill.
We start with the A-20 amendment.
Aye. A-20 amendment. Members, if everyone would get to the A-20 amendment, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is the result of ongoing conversations that we've had regarding the issue that was raised earlier in this committee and actually on the House floor as well in conjunction with our discussion of House File 160, and I believe 1223 is as well, regarding the requirement for township officials in township elections to use or make available a disability voting machine. We've had a number of discussions about this issue, Mr. Chair, and thought that we were close to having it resolved, but every time that we get close to having it resolved, new information arises that makes it obvious that it's more complex than anyone thought up to that point. So the conclusion that we reached in the last discussion with representatives of the disability community, as well as Representative Heidgerken, who was the chief author of the exemption bill in the last session, representatives from various elections officials, as well as Secretary of State, who came to the conclusion that what we needed to do, at least for the time being, is to grant another extension of the exemption. So what this amendment would do is exempt township elections through the 2009 election cycle, with the hope and expectation, Mr. Chair, that a more satisfactory ongoing solution can be reached in that time frame.
Right. Representative Hilty, have you moved this amendment?
I don't believe I did, Mr.
All
Chair,
right.
But
you
I
just
would
did now. All right.
Yes.
Representative Hilty moves the A-20 amendment. Anyone wish to testify for or against this amendment? Seeing no one that wishes to testify for or against, any questions, members?
What?
Representative Wolschweiger.
Chair, members, excuse me. I'm trying to find the delete all amendments, so.
It should be in your packet. We're working off the A20 right now. The A20 amendment, I think, can stand by itself. So if you look for the A20 amendment, I realize there's a the A20 amendment is just a single sheet of paper, and it should be in the newer list of amendments that came out. While she, Representative Howes,
thank
did you,
you
have a question on this?
No.
No. Any other questions on the A20 amendment? Seeing no questions, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hill, do you have any further amendments for us? No.
I do not, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Nelson, did you have an amendment to this?
Yes, I believe I had the A-12 amendment.
All right.
And I'd like to move that.
Representative Nelson moves the A-12 amendment. Members, that one may be in your green packet of saved materials.
And let me explain this. This is similar to House File 237 that we passed out of here. But remember, when we discussed it on the floor, I had some concerns about having gone through with a special election, how this would affect a special election. What I got when I asked after the committee meeting, it really makes it a convoluted process if you are unfortunate enough to be involved in a special election. And so I'm just adding to what was the House File 237 is the language on the first page, but from 1.8, starting at the or. Wait a second. No, it goes down here. It exempts the people that on line 1.11. It does not apply to the people who are registering seek an election in a special election to fill an unexpired term. And that's all it does, is exempts those people from the requirements of 237 that we passed, which was basically that was to get at large campaign donations going into a PAC fund to fund against in a regular election. This would allow a special election to go through under current law, and which is a 30-day process anyway, so it's a real short time period. And it would make it easier for those people that step up or agree to step up to do that and really remove some hurdles for them.
Any discussion? First time member.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Nelson, so is the thought that within that 30-day time period they wouldn't be able to accumulate large sums of cash like they would in an ordinary?
No.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anner, under current law, in a 30-day election, the governor has 5 days to call from the vacancy to call the election. So in that 5-day period, you've got to decide whether you're going to run or not. And currently under law, within 14 days of raising or spending $100, you have to register a campaign committee. So we're talking about people who don't have a campaign committee, don't have anything, aren't pre-planning this. You know, in my case, my representative passed away, so the people that were involved in the election, you're not out there planning for this person to die and acting like a ghoul out there doing this. It would return it to current law where it runs just like what currently now runs on an election, where you got 14 days from when you raise or spend $100 to form a campaign committee or register it, and then you can collect PAC donations like in a regular election, and that could happen during the legislative session. That's what it does. It just returns it to current law.
All right. Representative Hilty, what's your opinion on the A-12 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would only say about the amendment, I do support what Representative Nelson is trying to do, but if this were an amendment that was offered on the House floor, I believe one could say that it greatly expands the scope of the bill, since it refers to a section of law that is not referenced in the bill as it currently stands. So I was wondering if perhaps there was a in the possession of the committee or on the committee's agenda, a bill to which this might be more appropriately offered.
Representative Hilty, of the 200 bills, give or take, that we have, I'm sure we could find one. The question would then be, is it going to be heard?
That's why I addressed
and that's a more problematic question, given we have, after this committee hearing, 5 days left. I wanted to explore your statement. Mr. Gehring, is this a new section of law added to this? Would this be?
Mr. Chair, I believe there's not. I can go through and check. I believe there's not another section that deals with Chapter 10A in the delete all. So,
members, any further discussion to the A-12 amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage members to vote for this amendment. I think this is going in the right direction, and thank Representative Nelson for bringing it forward. So, I. We don't typically have significant germaneness requirements here, so I would encourage a yes vote.
Any further discussion? Representative Kahn.
Answer from Representative Hilty about whether you want this on the bill or not.
Representative Hilty. I think he answered it earlier.
I didn't hear. I couldn't understand it. Sorry. It needs to be answered in words of one syllable, like yes
Thank
or no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, I perhaps was not particularly clear. I said I do not oppose what Representative Nelson is trying to do, but I don't think that this is the appropriate vehicle, so I would oppose the amendment at this time.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right, members, who's going to offer what of all the amendments?
Yes.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to start, if the chair would allow me, with an amendment that we actually did last week.
All right.
We offered, and I believe it was adopted, the A9 amendment that has to do with photographing voters. And it can be found, the amendment should have been incorporated at page 16, starting at line 16.2.
Representative Member, I think it's still in my packet, so I have it here. The A9 amendment. Are you moving that? It's already incorporated, is that correct?
It is, and I wanted to go back to the discussion because after giving it some more thought, I think this is a dangerous it's a dangerous path on which we travel. So I had pulled the A8 amendment off the table when we adopted the A9. And the A8, Mr. Chairman, effectively removed, or its intent was to remove the additional language at line 16.6 of the delete all. And with the chair's permission, I would like to move the A8 amendment.
Representative Emmer moves the A8 amendment. And his explanation, members, for those of you that were here, would basically restore us to current law. Is that correct?
But with the exception that then I would like to have a discussion about the language that we added, the voter's consent.
All right. Well, we did discuss that at some point, but proceed. And remember, we're under somewhat of a time constraint here, and there are a lot of amendments.
At this point, Mr. Chairman, I would simply move the A8 amendment.
Right. Representative Emmer moves the A8 amendment. And Representative Hilty, your reaction to the A8 amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you recall, when we dealt with the A9 amendment, I felt that if we were going to have any restriction on the ability to photograph within the polling place, which I still think is a bad idea, that it would be better to allow the voter to decide in advance whether they were going to be photographed rather than force them to object. I don't think that the language that was in the A9 amendment actually was a movement in the right direction, and I think that given that, I would just as soon revert to current law as not. So I would not oppose the A8 amendment. But I would like some clarification about how that relates to the amendment already, the A9 already adopted. If that nullifies that, that would be fine. If that's still, if that's still there, that's a different question.
Representative Hilty, Mr. Gehring's going to respond to that. Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, if the committee were to pass the A8 amendment, that would supersede the A9 amendment. So the language would just go back to the current language that's in statute.
Representative Emmer, is that your intent? Then?
That is my intent.
All right. Any further discussion on the A8 amendment? Is there anyone who wishes to testify to this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Members, any other amendments? Representative House, which one?
Mr. Chairman, it would be the A15, I believe. I don't believe you have it yet.
Oh, we have to hand it up. Members, the A15 is being passed out now. So, Representative House, you're going to move the A15 amendment?
Yes, I'll move the A15 amendment.
Representative Howes moves the A15 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, if someone could get one to Ms. Fraser right away, I don't know that she has the A15 amendment, but...
Ms. Fraser, do you have it?
We do have
yes,
it.
All right. Representative Howes, they have it.
Okay. What it does is delete Section 45 dealing with appointments for county commissioners, and it inserts... you'll have to read it, but it inserts some language dealing with filling vacancies. And current law says the election would have to be in 30 to 60 days. We're changing that to 90 days to give local units of government more time, because there are times when a vacancy becomes open just before or just after filing. And also, if a vacancy were to occur 90 days before an election, they could... And our current law would have to have a special election within 60 days, but this would allow them to have it actually during the general election. And the second part of the bill would allow counties to fill the vacancy of a county commissioner if the office became vacant and the unexpired portion of the term was less than 2 years. If it fell during a year that we had a general election, they would appoint until the general election. But if it was the following year, then it would. It's very possible that the appointee could serve in that office for a year and a half if the timing became right. The reason for this bill, and I've had it in the elections bill for the past 6 or 7 years, and for some reason we get to the end of session and all we do is our finance bills, so it's never been brought up on the floor. I had a county commissioner die in Las Vegas in July. I'm thinking it was 2002. The county had to put in all the local newspapers an announcement of opening filing for special session or special election. His body had not been put in the ground yet. They had not had the funeral. It was just a horrendous thing to happen. And I haven't had a great deal of opposition to this particular bill in the past. The past Secretary of State supported it, and I know I've dealt with the current Secretary of State, and he's not opposed to it. If opposition were to come along, either in this committee or in the next committee, I would be open to changing the wording to put in case of death or incapacity by illness into this. I just don't know if I need to go that far. I think it makes sense what we're trying to do here.
All right. Representative Hilty or Ms. Frazier, you want to respond to the A-15 amendment?
You have no objection to the A-15 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just my previous senator, Senator Janet Johnson, passed away in 99 quite suddenly, and it was a difficult timing situation where her good friend, who became Senator Twyla Ring, became senator, was still Twyla Ring at the time. It was just a very, very difficult situation, and I think that Representative Howes I know it's not changed in the state office, but I think that same difficulty could be fixed by Representative House's bill at the county commissioner level.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of the A-15 amendment signify by saying aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any other amendments, members?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A-3 amendment.
I'm sorry, was that A-3?
A-3.
A-3.
And briefly, would you like me to address it?
Representative Emmer, you're moving the A-3?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Emmer moves the A-3 amendment. Representative Emmer.
Members, this amendment addresses some language that you'll find at the bottom of page 4 and the top of page 5 of the delete all that's been adopted. The language provides for a formula to pay folks to get completed registration cards and get them filed with the Secretary of State. Briefly, I think this is almost as bad as allowing personal injury attorneys to get paid by contingent fee. Oh, that was quiet. Well, then maybe we should increase the contingencies. At any rate, Mr. Chair, I'd move this because I don't think we should be turning it into that type of a program.
All right.
I'd move for a roll call.
Members, if it isn't in your packet, we can get you in, but unless you pulled some material out from the last meeting, it may not have been saved. So if you do need the amendment, let us know and we'll get you a copy. Any further discussion on the A-3 amendment? Representative Hilty, what's your reaction to the A-3?
Mr. Chair, I think that there is someone here who would like to testify in this amendment. Perhaps we should proceed in that.
Whoever that is, would they come down, please?
Personally.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Josh Winders with the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits and also a member of the Voting Rights Coalition.
Now, proceed.
The Minnesota Council of Nonprofits is concerned about the unintended consequences this would have on nonprofits in Minnesota. The Council of Nonprofits works with hundreds of nonprofits who would be impacted by this provision. All nonprofits who receive a state grant or contract are mandated by the state to provide nonpartisan voter registration services to the individuals and the communities they serve. In addition, nonprofits that don't receive state assistance have salaried staff who also offer nonpartisan voter registration to empower their communities and continue Minnesota's rich civic tradition of political participation. And nonprofits are just one example of organizations that would be impacted by this change. It's also worth pointing out that if this amendment were to pass, you would also be excluding the Secretary of State's office, county auditors, and state agencies from registering voters with whom they come in contact. We would respectfully urge the committee to vote no on the A3 amendment.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Joanne Tezar, and I'm with Community Action Partnership of Ramsey.
You repeat your name one more time.
Joanne Tezar, T-E-S-A-R. And I'm with Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we strongly recommend you consider the implications of this amendment. The amendment as proposed is in direct conflict with our state Community Action Grant and our state Head Start Grant. Those grants mandate us to offer voter registration services to our participants. Community Action employs 300 staff, and of that staff, theoretically, 100 frontline staff would be negatively impacted. Community Actions around the state would be negatively impacted by this amendment. And again, I want to respectfully ask you to vote no on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe, Representative Ember, that if the National Rifle Association on their website, which I'm sure they paid someone to set up, has a register to vote button that refers folks to the Minnesota Secretary website, Secretary of State's website, to register to vote, that they may be in violation of your amendment. I don't think that that's, I think we're, it just opens up a huge can of worms there. And I think anyone who is compensated for soliciting voter registration applications, which can be downloaded as PDFs, I think it's a, I think it's kind of the wrong move to go.
Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I would disagree with that completely. I think Representative Kalin should probably do a little bit more research on that NRA issue because that wouldn't be applicable. Question for the first testifier. Sir, could you just give the committee a brief summary of the members of the Minnesota Voting Rights Coalition?
Was it Mr. Winters? Okay, Mr. Winters.
Mr. Chair and members, we are currently working to provide a list of the members of the Voting Rights Coalition to this committee. I believe, as we've stated before, it includes organizations such as the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, Minnesota Disability Law Center, League of Women Voters, and other civic institutions interested in the voting franchise.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Emmer.
Well, Mr. Winters, isn't the AFL-CIO a member of the Minnesota Voting Rights Coalition?
Mr. Winters?
Mr. Chair and Representative Emmer, the AFL-CIO has been to meetings. They have an interest in voter participation.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmer.
It always concerns me, members. First, I think we're headed down a dangerous slope, and while I welcome any criticism from any one of you or anyone else about what I'm about the language I'm proposing, I think the message that I'm sending is we do not want to have, even though as the testifier has described it as a nonpartisan organization, it is far from nonpartisan. There's always some partisanship involved, and I'm very concerned by a statement that he made early on, which is we want to continue the rich tradition of voting participation in the state of Minnesota. Unfortunately, I think the language as we've got drafted in the bill would emphasize the word rich in terms of how we're addressing it. Let's not start paying people on a contingency to go collect registration, people on a contingency to go collect registration cards. That is what I'm trying to get at, and I would ask for your support. And again, I asked for a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to put back on the record that I did ask for that list last week at this committee, and I have not received it.
All right. Mr. Winters, just for your information, Representative Broad did make the statement that if you could get the list to the committee of the members, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Beth Frazier, the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Secretary of State's Office. I believe that the language in Representative Emmer not only would prohibit the groups already mentioned, it would probably also prohibit staff of political parties and of statewide candidates from registering folks to vote. I think that the language that in Section 6 that Representative Emmer is deleting accomplishes his goal of prohibiting soliciting registrations on a bounty basis. It prohibits paying per card, and it prohibits using a strict quota. So this would allow salaried employees, we want to allow salaried employees to, and hourly employees, to help with voter registration. And our current language prohibits voter registrations based upon the number of cards collected.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clear two points. The gentleman that testified said that it would affect the Secretary of State or the County Auditor. I don't believe that the County Auditor or the Secretary of State solicit and collect or accept voter registrations and applications from voters just simply to submit to themselves and in that fashion. Also, the NRA, just a correction, may solicit people to register to vote, but the NRA does not collect and then submit voter registrations to the Secretary of State or the County Auditor. Is there a problem with current law that we have that portion in the bill at all? Can't we just go back to current law and not be dealing with either issue?
Representative House, I think Ms. Frazier wants to respond to your observations, and then she can probably answer the second one also. So, Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative House, the Secretary of State's office actually does solicit voter registrations. The previous secretary had staff go to community events across the state and try to register voters, and I believe that this would prohibit our staff from trying to register voters. The reason that the language that we have in the bill is there is that there are a few groups in Minnesota that have paid their staff per card, and we found that it creates an incentive to duplicate cards or falsify cards, and the counties receive sometimes multiple cards with the same name on them. And we believe that this creates an incentive for bad behavior. So we're trying to prohibit that practice. So that's what the language does, and I believe other states have implemented similar language.
Representative House?
We will cordially agree to disagree.
Representative Kalin? No? Thank you. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just while I'm waiting for the list of who's involved with the Voting Rights Coalition, maybe Ms. Frazier, I think you had a connection to them in the past. I'm wondering, is Take Action Minnesota or Progressive Minnesota a part of that Voting Rights Coalition?
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, yes, Take Action Minnesota is a member.
Okay.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, the groups that you were talking about that were doing this improperly, what you're trying to get at. Who were those groups? I don't recall. I recall one of them, but...
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, the two groups that I'm aware of that have done this, one is ACORN, which did it in the 2004 election and changed their practices in response to complaints and now pays their employees hourly. The other is the Republican Party of Minnesota, which I understand in Mankato paid people per card.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, is Take Action Minnesota, this isn't for you, I don't think it's appropriate for the Secretary of State's office, this question, but maybe Mr. Winters, Take Action Minnesota or Progressive Minnesota, I just want confirmation that they are members of your coalition, and just my understanding is that this is the same group who's put out the proposal to allow non-citizens to vote. Is that correct, Mr. Winters?
Mr. Winters, you want to come back up for a second and respond to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I think that question would be best answered by a representative from Take Action Minnesota, and I believe Take Action Minnesota Education Fund.
Do we have a representative wants to come down? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I'm Scott Cooper with Take Action Minnesota and the Minnesota Voting Rights Coalition. And Take Action Minnesota is a member of the Minnesota Voting Rights Coalition and has no position on the bill that you referenced.
Herb Sembron.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Cooper, first of all, thank you for indicating that you are both a member of the Voting Rights Coalition and Take Action Minnesota. I think the last time you testified, thank you for being here, but I don't know that Take Action Minnesota was listed on your resume when you came forward. But it's my understanding if you don't have a position, I'm looking at a Pioneer Press article right here that it says that Take Action Minnesota listed the idea of non-citizens voting on literature that it gave city council members before a screening. Is that not correct?
Mr. Cooper.
That may be correct, not as far as I know, though.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hilty, just as a reminder, before we go to the roll call on the A3 amendment, what's your position on it?
Mr. Chair, I would oppose the A3 amendment. I think that this would be an amendment that is fraught with unintended consequences.
All right. With that, members, a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Representative Anderson? Representative Broad?
Yes.
Representative Emmer?
Yes.
Representative Hilty?
No.
Representative Powles?
Yes.
Representative Kahn?
No.
Representative Kalin?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Pompey?
No.
Representative Simon?
No.
Representative Winkler?
No.
Representative Wolfschlocker?
No.
Members, seeing that there are 10 nays and 6 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Member, do you have?
I would move the A4 amendment, Mr. Chairman, and this one should be much quicker.
Representative Emmer moves the A4 amendment.
This is simply reinserting on page 6 of the delete all the cross-referencing information that comes with the vouching. I think what we're doing here, with all due respect to the author and the folks in the Secretary of State's office that are promoting this, is we're eliminating one of the safeguards in the system when it comes to vouching. The cross-referencing, I think, is important. That it be maintained, and I frankly didn't hear any testimony that suggested that it should be taken out.
All right, Representative Emmer, I've got the A4 in front of me, and again, it's specifically, what page number are you saying?
Well, it's drafted, I think, incorrect in that the A4 says delete section 7, but all we were trying to get at was it should be page 6, reinsert line 6.8 after the word application through line 6.12.
Mr. Gehring, is the A4 drafted correctly?
Yes. Mr. Chair, the amendment is drafted correctly.
It is. I read it wrong.
We're saying now.
Representative Emmer, I'm just going to...
Oh, that's right. We had this discussion.
Right.
Thank you.
I'm trying to make sure that the record is correct with exactly what we're doing when folks go back and either listen or watch. So the amendment is correct to the delete everything.
Yes, it is.
Representative Hilty, your position on the A4 amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would oppose the A4 amendment. Representative Emmer has suggested there hasn't been any testimony about this. We actually do have someone that would like to testify to the logic of this provision.
All right, a familiar face. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, Joe Mansky from Ramsey County, but I'm actually speaking for the county auditors today. And what's going on here is, I think as most of the members know, when someone vouches for you at the polling place, they fill out a card. The card is attached to your voter registration card and remains with it for as long as we have the card. And so we do have a written record of who is vouched for and who is doing the vouching. And that, by the way, is what we provide the county attorney if we have a problem with the prosecution. What we would rather not continue doing is putting this information electronically into the voter registration system because it's redundant and it's just unnecessarily time-consuming.
Okay. Any questions? Rep. Simbolson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mansky, it's not clear to me. I'm trying to follow in the language to see how this does only what you've just suggested. If I understood this correctly, we're eliminating the need for someone to vouch, period.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, that is not correct. What is going on here is what we want to see removed is the requirement to put an indication that someone was vouched for in the voter registration system. And as I mentioned a minute ago, we actually have the original voucher card with the voucher's signature and oath attached to the voter registration card of the person who was vouched for. And again, if there is a question from the county attorney's office on whether or not that vouching was correct, that's what we would provide them, not the electronic record.
Mr. Simbolson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not clear to me why. Why is that? Why is it a problem to enter it in that system?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, it's time-consuming to do this. It adds a couple of seconds to every transaction. That may not strike you as being a big deal, but remember that we, in a presidential election year like next year, will process in excess of 130,000 voter registration cards. I mean, it all adds up. It burns a lot of our staff time, which we would prefer to spend on more productive activities.
Mr. Chair, my final thoughts, it's not clear to me where this would then be required to occur.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, I'll just say this one more time. When the voucher is vouching at the polling place, they fill out a card, they sign it, they swear to the oath on the card. That card gets attached to the voter's voter registration card and remains with it for as long as we have the card.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to reassure Representative Emmer that this really doesn't do away with any of the checks or balances in the system. When the legislature put in place the limit of 15 vouchers, they required election judges to track in the polling place how many people each person had vouched for. Since you can only vouch for people in the precinct in which you are registered, it would be clear to the election judges if someone had exceeded that number. It would also, I believe, be clear to the counties as they're entering the records if they see the same voucher's name attached to the voter registration card if they see it too many times. Mr. Mansky could correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that this requirement may also apply to vouching done by employees at residential facilities. And there's no limit for the number of people that employees may vouch for. And so it's writing down this, it's requiring them to type in information when I think the main purpose of that was to check on the limit. So in that case, it's really not needed.
Last comment, Mr. Chair. Members, I hope that you're hearing what I did, which is, Mr. Mansky and his office have access to the information. The county attorney has access to the information, but the public does not. That is a problem, and I think that when somebody says it doesn't affect the checks and balances, it does. The few seconds are important to maintain the integrity of the system. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Mr.
Chairman and Representative Verma, very quickly, and then we can move on. The information that you were talking about here is voucher information. In fact, is not a part of the public information list to which the public does have access.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Begging your pardon, I'd ask for a roll call vote on this.
Roll call has been requested. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Broad?
Yes.
Representative Emmer?
Yes.
Representative Hilty?
No.
Representative House? Representative Hahn?
No.
Representative Kalin?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Coffey?
No.
Representative Simon?
No.
Representative Winter?
No.
Representative Wolfshocker?
No.
There are 11 nays and only 4 ayes. The motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Members, we're at the end, really, of our time. And this bill is going on to, if it passes, to the Finance Committee and then to Representative Kahn's division. So we've spent three hearings on it. Representative Hilty is going to renew his motion that House File 1110, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in
Mr.
favor...
Mr. Chairman?
Is there someone... Oh, I'm sorry, Representative...
Mr. Chairman, I had a couple other amendments that I'd like to work on this bill. I don't serve on either of those committees, and these, I think, are very relevant to this committee. So, Mr. Chairman, if we're at the end of our time, I would ask that we lay the bill on the table for the current time and pick it up at another point.
Representative Broad, again, we've tried to be as accommodating as we can, and we have spent 3 committee hearings on this bill already. People are about to have a vote as to whether or not to proceed with the bill for its next stop.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move to lay the bill on the table.
Representative Broad moves to lay the bill on the table. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, could I move Amendment A-16, please?
Representative Broad, all right, one more amendment. What was the amendment?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, if it's just one amendment, I'd like to move the A-19 amendment.
The A-19 amendment, if I can even... All right, Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, this actually goes back to a discussion that we had, and I'll title this as If It's Not Broke, Don't Fix It. This is that amendment that deals with the newspaper discussion that we had Representative Nelson brought out and I agree with. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd appreciate the support.
All right. Representative Broad has brought forth a significant issue that was discussed at length in the previous hearings. Representative Hilty, to the A-19 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I've had numerous discussions about this amendment as well, and the conclusion that I came to is that I would oppose the amendment. I think that Mr. Manske would like to testify on this briefly, if that's possible.
Mr. Manske, you want to come down, and if... All right, we may have one other individual that wishes to testify directly to this amendment. Mr. Manske, to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, and I don't know whether I'm paddling upstream on this one, but let me just give you one last sales pitch here. The sample ballot that we're required to print in the newspaper under the current law includes every office that we would put on the ballot. In Ramsey County, we have 9 state senate districts, 17 state representative districts. Our sample ballot, for those of you who have seen it in the newspaper, is huge and totally uninformative because it doesn't look like any ballot that a real person will ever vote on. And based on that, we get a lot of calls from people. For example, in the most recent year, people who wanted to know why they didn't see candidates for Patty Wetterling and Michelle Bachmann on their ballot in Arden Hills or in Roseville. And the reason is that they don't live in those districts, but we had to put that district on our sample ballot because one of our precincts is in that district. And my thought is if we're going to spend the time and money to do something, we ought to do something that actually helps people out rather than confuse them. And so we would rather not print that thing in the newspaper.
One more individual, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sandy Naren on behalf of the Minnesota Newspaper Association. We would agree with Joe Manske that we want the publication to be meaningful. And I have suggested some alternative language to Representative Hilty. He has actually made a counter-suggestion to me that I think is even better, but there wasn't time, I don't think, to work out that alternative language before this hearing. So our hopes are that we can continue to work with Representative Hilty and make sure that this publication is meaningful. I'd obviously prefer these sections be out while we continue talking, but I trust Representative Hilty to work with us in good faith to make the language work just well.
Well, all right, so, Ms. Herring, you're for the amendment or against?
Well, Mr. Chair, we'd obviously prefer the amendment. Can you working to make it meaningful? We'd rather not delete the newspaper
with
publication.
With the caveat, you'll continue to.
But I trust Representative Hilty.
We all trust Representative Hilty. That we can say without fear of contradiction. Any further discussion to this amendment? All right. All those in favor of the A19 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion. The chair is in doubt. All those in favor of the amendment, raise your hand. All those opposed. Chair votes for the amendment. The amendment prevails. Amendment is passed. Representative Hilty, any further amendments? Because we are really pushing it. Seeing none, Representative Hilty renews his motion that House File 1110 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. The bill proceeds. Thank you, Representative Hilty. Thank you, Ms. Frazier, for all your time and effort.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair.
Members, is adjourned.